Today's podcast is brought to you by Howie's VIP studio visit. The captain will be back starting the first week of May. To order your tickets before they are all sold out, go to HowieCarshow.com and click on the VIP tab. Enjoy the podcast.
Better strap yourself in. It's time for the Howie Carr Show.
But we've really got to not declare victory prematurely. So we're in the late innings.
So you think the seventh, the eighth inning, or late innings? What inning are you talking about?
How about the bottom of the sixth?
I never realized how boring this game is.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
Stop and get a vaccine. And if you get a vaccine, you get a free ticket to a Yankees or a Mets game.
Our new shot and a beer program. Any New Jerseyan who gets their first vaccine dose in the month of May will receive a free beer.
Activists staged a Joints for Jabs campaign, giving anyone who'd been inoculated free weed.
Please come with me to Rainbow Land, where unicorns are made of fudge and cotton candy. And everything is free.
Rump swabs, hacks, and moon bats beware. It's Howie Carr.
Why do you only get free weed? What about fentanyl? Why can't you get some cocaine or crack cocaine?
Some pharmaceutical fentanyl?
That's anything, you know? Come on. What is this discrimination? And why only hot dogs and hamburgers in Newark, New Jersey? Why not sausages or kielbasa in Western Massachusetts or Buffalo, New York, where there are a lot of Polish people? Come on. We demand equity here. That's the word of the day in the United States, equity. Everybody gets bribed in some way or another to get the shot. And I don't mean with tickets to some four-hour or five-hour baseball games where they're switching pitchers every two batters or every one batter. Anyway, welcome to the Howie Carr Show, 844-500-4242. That is the toll-free number of the Howie Carr Show. If you want to join us, we got a lot planned here for the rest of the day. And we're going to be joined by an author who's got a great new book out about the difference between how America handled the Hong Kong flu in 57, 58, as opposed to today. And it's pretty amazing. Anyway, 844-500-4242. Wanted to just read a few stories here before we go any further. Just things that are percolating. Cornell University. This is an Ivy League school, purportedly very woke school. Among the Ivy League school's outdoor education offerings for the spring semester this year was a course called BIPOC Rock Climbing. I think that means no whites need, no straight whites need apply to learn how to rock climb. The course description specified that the class was for, quote, people who identify as Black, Indigenous, Latinx, Asian, or other people of color. How about if you identify as Hispanic? Latinx?
It's not Latinx. It's Latinx.
In my neighborhood, we call it Latinx.
I believe that's a slur.
It's Latinx. How about if you identify as Hispanic or as Mexican-American?
That's Latinx.
Yeah, but they just say you have to identify as Latinx. Latinx. You can't identify. It says nothing here about Hispanics. It just says Latinx. I don't know. This prompted an uproar from across the internet. The university was accused of violating federal and state civil rights laws. Well, it certainly seems that, right? And so they've changed it now to read, this class is designed to enable Black, the usual, and other people of color underrepresented in the sport of rock climbing to learn the sport and feel included and supported. This class is open to all Cornell students interested in learning rock climbing with this special focus. Because, you know, how many times have you gone to a rock climbing place and you've seen only white people allowed to climb the rocks? I mean, what is this all about? And so one of the instructors said that the course was meant to help alleviate what he called, quote, an issue of inaccessibility for minorities in this white-centric sport. White-centric. There's a new word for me. I'm not familiar with that word either. 844-500-4242. You know, we talk about the Profiles in Courage Award by the Kennedy family, and I think they're giving it to, who are they giving it to, Cuomo or Pelosi? One of those fools. It was just typical. I can't even remember who it is. But there's also another Kennedy Award. It's the JFK Presidential Library is honoring seven people for their COVID courage. COVID courage. One of the recipients is Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. She had the courage to demand that people who live in Michigan not go anywhere for the spring break holidays. And then she flew off to West Palm Beach, Florida to visit her father. She had the courage of her hypocrisy. And this was 2 years of courage of her hypocrisy. Last year, she told people not to go from Detroit to the Upper Peninsula and put their boats in the water like they do every year. And it was later revealed that her husband called the marina where their boat was stored on the Upper Peninsula and asked for it to be put in the water before Memorial Day because he's, of course, the first gentleman or whatever. So I think it's only appropriate that she should get an award from the Kennedy family for her courage. All right.
I ain't got. Courage.
Oh, you could say that again.
Courage. Also known as chutzpah. God. It's great to be a Democrat, isn't it? You know, you never have to worry about being called out for anything. Nothing. So for a while, Biden said he was going to abide by Trump's refugee cap of 15,000. And of course, there was an uproar because they wanted to get these undocumented Democrats, get them into the country, put them on welfare. And so he is folded in the face of pressure. And he's now going to allow 62,000 refugees into the country this year. And this is from 62,500 low-skilled foreigners from the third world. And Michelle Malkin has a column about this in Jewish World Review. This influx will include 22,000 Africans, 6,000 East Asians, 4,000 Europeans and Central Asians, 5,000 Latin Americans and Caribbean nationals, 13,000 Near Easterners and South Asians, and another 12,500 from unspecified countries. And she thinks they're going to throw in some climate refugees. That's the new thing, climate refugees. The climate is there are a lot of help wanted signs, so they got to get out from that under that climate and get to the United States. The Center for Immigration Studies estimates that the average refugee's lifetime fiscal cost to people who work for a living in the United States is $60,000. With those entering as adults, ages 25 to 64, they cost each of each tax they cost all taxpayers $133,000 each. Only one third of these adult refugees have completed more than a sixth grade education before reaching the United States. So they're going to be paying a lot of taxes. Not. They are granted immediate access to government welfare programs, including Medicaid, housing, food stamps, and cash assistance. CIS Research Director, that's Center for Immigration Studies, Research Director Steve Camerata, he's been on the show before, he concluded that, quote, for what it costs to resettle one Middle Eastern refugee in the United States for 5 years, about 12 refugees can be helped in the Middle East for 5 years, or 61 refugees can be helped for 1 year. Okay. Meanwhile, they want more and more welfare programs are being proposed here. AOC is now pushing for a 1.5 million strong climate corps. A climate corps. So these are federal jobs for people to go on the payroll and learn how to be activists. They will work on federally funded projects, quote, to reduce carbon emissions, enable a transition, to renewable energy, build healthier and more resilient communities, implement conservation projects with proven climate benefits, and help communities recover from climate disasters. Climate disasters. Again, I'm reliving my youth in the 1970s. They had this thing. It was called CETA. Anybody remember CETA? Comprehensive Employment and Training Act. The young man here doesn't remember CETA. It's just as well. Everyone learned how to be a hack at CETA. You know, you just learned how to get a government job. In Boston, it was called, CETA set up something called the Youth Activities Commission. YAC. They called it YAC. And we called it, at City Hall, we called everybody who went to work for YAC. You had to be hired because you worked for the mayor, Kevin White. That's the only way you could take over a precinct or work for one of the precinct captains or carry a briefcase for the ward boss or whatever. That's how you became. We called them YAC hacks. And I would guess 90 to 95% of the YAC hacks never got a real job after that. You think fentanyl or heroin is an addictive drug? Getting a hack job in something like the Climate Corps or the Youth Activities Commission or Comprehensive Employment Training Act, it's worse. And now they want to set up a new one, a Climate Corps. What could possibly go wrong? 844-500-4242. That is the toll-free number of the Howie Carr Show. If you would like to join us here this afternoon, every weekday afternoon, allergy season is here, and that means one thing. You need the Eden Pure Thunderstorm Air Purifier. Warmer temps are creeping up, and you are going to want to open those doors and windows. Pollen is going to come in, and when it does, you're going to need the Thunderstorm Air Purifier. One user wrote, "The Thunderstorm does what it claims. It definitely is effective on my husband's allergies, sneezing, runny nose, and coughing."
I wonder if the VIPs can see that it's running in the studio right now. Can they even hear it?
Can you even hear it? You can't hear it, right? Smells pretty good too, right? Yeah. All right. The Thunderstorm is a small device you can hold in your hand, which I'm doing right now, and plug into your electrical outlet like the other one is over there, and or into your car by USB cable to purify the air. And the great part is it's well under $100. The Thunderstorm air purifier works like a real thunderstorm. It quietly sends out super oxygen and ions to kill odors in your room and purify the air. Many use it to remove pet smells. For pollen, pet, kitchen, and musty basements, tobacco, or any other kind of unwanted odors, you need the Thunderstorm. Right now, you can get the Thunderstorm at the lowest price available. Just use code word Howie, and you will save an additional $10 off the sales price and get free shipping. Go to EdenPure.com, click on the radio banner, and put in code word Howie at checkout. That's EdenPure.com, radio banner, and code word Howie. With the Eden Pure Thunderstorm, your problem rooms will no longer be a problem. I'm Howie Carr.
Don't touch that dial. Howie Carr will be back after this.
Made it by! Top of the world!
The Howie Carr Show.
Support your brain health and cognitive performance with clinically studied ingredients found only in Superbeats Memory and Focus Chews. Get a free 30-day supply of Superbeats Memory and Focus with your purchase of Superbeats Heart Chews when you shop at superbeatsradio.com/Howie. Taylor, what's the poll question? What are the results thus far?
Should there be special seating for vaccinated fans at ball games?
And there is going to be that in New York City for Mets and Yankees games this summer. No, there should not be.
87% say no.
And I want to know how they're going to enforce it. What if you self-identify as vaccinated? Who's going to check the vaccination passports?
What if you self-identify as third base coach?
That's true. Who's going to stop you from going onto the field? Right. How are they going to make sure that all the players and the coaches and the bat boys are vaccinated? How about the people that are serving the eats and the beer and the soft drinks in the stadiums themselves? Who's gonna do all this? 844-500-4242. Let's play this is an example of you know, if you're in front of a microphone, you should probably watch what you're saying. Keep it very anodyne, vanilla. Kevin McCarthy's a pretty smart guy, but he was with Steve Ducey the other day. Steve Ducey on Fox and Friends, he likes to talk to people off camera, you know, as he's warming up. And sometimes, you know, it just bleeds through. And so he's talking to, so Steve Ducey's asking him before he goes on what they're going to do with Liz Cheney, or as Nancy Pelosi calls her, Lynn Cheney. Cut 12.
I think she's got real problems. I've had it with. It's, you know, I've lost confidence. Well, someone just has to bring a motion, but I assume that would probably take place.
I mean, it's obvious, but, you know, sometimes, you know, you shouldn't really say something, even though it is obvious what's going to happen. Ethan, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Ethan.
Hi, Howie. I've been hearing a lot of people talking about being in the bottom of the sixth inning, and I just think that we're way in the extra innings already with this virus thing.
I agree.
I think we're there because, yeah, and I think I'm hoping we can agree on some stuff, because I know that we don't agree on a lot of stuff because I listen to you a lot. But see, I think a lot of people, we've been doing a lot of stuff that we shouldn't have done, and we didn't do stuff that we should have done. So I don't think that shutting down businesses was a good idea. I don't think that telling people what to do was a good idea, or any mandates or anything like that. But the people who don't wear masks, I just think it's common sense that you don't want sick people breathing on you. And that I think if we all would have worn masks a little bit better, and they hadn't done stupid lockdown things.
Ethan, if you're vaccinated, they told us we didn't need to wear a mask. I'm vaccinated. Why do I need to wear a mask?
I'm vaccinated because I'm a teacher. I've got my two shots, and I don't wear
masks.
So you don't need a mask.
You don't need a mask.
I don't think we ever needed to wear masks outside, Howie. We never needed to wear masks outside.
I don't think we needed to wear them inside either. I mean, we're going to talk with this guy about, you know, the Hong Kong flu. He's going to tell us this in a few minutes. The Hong Kong flu killed people across the demographic spectrum. This flu, it's what it is. It's a virus. It has only killed people, you know, the vast majority are over the age of 70. Probably a majority over the age of 80. And the only people that are under that, with very rare exceptions, are people that have been very sick to begin with, that have had these comorbidities. And I don't even trust the numbers that have come out. Do you? Do you really trust any of these numbers?
I kind of do. I mean, I've heard, I think what, right now we're around 600 million Americans, 600,000 Americans, right? Don't call me Joe Biden.
That's what I was thinking, right, Ethan. You read my mind.
Then, yeah, I'm sure you were going to do it. And in India now, the whole country is getting ravaged. There's just no denying it. They're burning bodies in parks. And I wish
they don't have the same sanitary systems that we have, though, Ethan. I mean, a lot of this has to do with sanitation, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. But a lot of it also has to do with the fact that they had the double mutant going through. Like when the virus first went through India, it didn't affect them.
That's what viruses do. They mutate, right? That's why they're viruses. That's what a virus is, virus. And that's what they do. I mean, there's only so much we can do here. This was the first time they've ever locked down a healthy population to stop the spread of a virus, and it didn't work. And well, it worked. It worked for the deep state. It didn't work for the population. Unless, of course, you converted and became a follower of the cult of the mask. And I guess in that case, you're pretty happy. I'm Howie Carr.
Live from the Matthews Brothers Studios.
We've heard a lot of comparisons in the last year, 14 months, to the Spanish flu of 1918, 1919. But there have been other flus that killed a lot of people in America and worldwide since then. And one of them was the Asian flu in 1957, 58.
How dare you!
The Hong Kong flu of 1968, 69. There's a bunch of different flus. Neil Ferguson, not the Neil Ferguson we were talking about earlier. This is a different Neil Ferguson. He's a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution at Stanford University. He has a new book out, and it's called Doom, The Politics of Catastrophe. It was published yesterday by Penguin Press. And there was an excerpt in the Wall Street Journal last weekend, How a More Resilient America Beat a Mid-Century Pandemic. In 1957, the U.S. rose to the challenge of the so-called Asian flu with stoicism and a high tolerance for risk, offering a stark approach with today's a stark contrast with today's approach to COVID-19. It's really an interesting. I haven't read the book, but I read the piece in the Wall Street Journal. It's extremely interesting, and I thought it would be worthwhile to have him on air to discuss the differences. Neil Ferguson, thanks for being with us here on the Howie Carr Show.
Great to be with you, Howie.
Let's talk about what you said, the lower tolerance for risk that modern Americans have compared to our predecessors 60 plus years ago. Tell us about how people in the U.S. handled the Asian flu back in the 50s.
Well, I think it's great that you pointed out that this experience was much closer to our own than the really terrible pandemic of 1918-19, which was a far, far worse disaster worldwide. Something like 39 million people died in 1918-19. If you translate that into 2020 population, you're looking at 160 million. We're nowhere close to that. We're much closer to 57-58, somewhere around 0.04% of the world's population died. It's about the same, in fact. The U.S. had a better experience in 1957-58 than it did in the last year and a bit. But I think that's partly because we did indeed have a different attitude towards risk in the 1950s. This was, of course, a time when people had fresh memories of World War II, not to mention the Depression, as well as the Korean War. And, of course, there were many diseases that had still to be defeated. Polio was one of them. And I, reading the accounts of that time and also talking to people who remember it, because there are plenty of them still alive, it's clear that our attitude was very different. And nobody thought for one moment of locking down the economy in 1957. They didn't even close schools. They accepted that there was risk, and indeed there was risk to young people, much, much more risk than from COVID, and life went on. So clearly a lot has changed since 1957.
Well, as you mentioned, one of the rock and roll hits of the year was the Rockin' Pneumonia and the Boogie Woogie Flu by Huey Piano Smith and the Clowns. A lot of us know better the Johnny Rivers remake, but I mean, that was basically making light of the entire problem, wasn't it?
Yeah, and it tells you a bit about the very different attitudes of that time. I mean, as I said, the Asian flu, as it was possible to call it in those days before political correctness, was actually a disease that hit teenagers pretty hard, as well as the very young. It was very different in that respect from COVID. But, you know, people were kind of joking about it. And when I talked to people who were around then, they recollect a kind of stoicism and acceptance that life was full of dangers. And you just had to take it on the chin and keep on keeping on. Of course, we didn't really have the option in 1957 to work from home in large numbers because there was no internet. In fact, a significant number of Americans didn't even have the telephone. So we didn't have the option to do lockdowns back then. But looking at the kind of advice that Eisenhower, who was then president, got from his public health experts, nobody considered anything other than just making sure that the hospitals were able to cope with the people who got really sick. Everyone else was told, you know, take a day off work, take a day off school if you need to, and drink plenty of water and fruit juice. That was the kind of philosophy at that time.
I've been citing all week the numbers you came up with about how much Eisenhower asked Congress. I mean, the number now is up, for Biden, is up to $7 trillion. $7 trillion. And yet, I'm going to read now from your Wall Street Journal piece. The President Eisenhower asked Congress for a mere $2.5 million, $23 million in today's inflation-adjusted terms to provide additional support to the public health service. $23 million versus $7 trillion. How incredible is that?
It's extraordinary. It's to be transported back to a different time. Eisenhower's view was that, yep, there should be a little bit of help for, particularly for the hunt for a vaccine, but that was about it. And if you look at the economic data from that time, it's not visible that there was a pandemic. There actually was a slight recession at that point. It had nothing whatever to do with the pandemic. It was a monetary story, and so you wouldn't know that there had been such a serious public health challenge. The Eisenhower administration was, of course, far more concerned about the Cold War than it was about flu.
Yeah.
This was the same year as Sputnik, and you know, the president thought that probably just did outrank a new strain of influenza. But I don't want to make light of it. It was a pretty serious episode, and a friend emailed me the other day who was 10 at the time. He said, I was sick that year. It was the sickest I've ever been in my life. So this was not as bad a tragedy as COVID, but then it was a younger and maybe also a healthier population. Let's not forget, there wasn't much in the way of obesity in the United States in 1957.
Because right. Everybody smoked cigarettes. That's why.
Probably didn't help in other ways. With the rest.
Yeah, as smoking declines, obesity has increased. I think they're pretty much related. I listen to this. Again, this is from your story, your excerpt in the Wall Street Journal. This is the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials. Now, these are the same people that today, these are the people who come out with white coats accompanying the local governor or the local mayor. And, announced that, they've been studying the charts and following the science and the data and that everything has to remain locked down indefinitely, et cetera, et cetera. But this is what the Association of State and Territorial Health Officials, the same people as the Dr. Sutters and the rest of them and the woman, in Pennsylvania, Dr. Levine, this is what they were saying in 1957. There is no practical advantage in the closing of schools or the curtailment of public gatherings as it relates to the spread of this disease. I think we would have been better served in the United States, in the UK probably, and elsewhere if we had followed the advice of the health officials in 1957 rather than the officials of 2021.
Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of oversimplified this last year and made it a choice between total lockdown or letting the virus rip. And I think that was the wrong way to think about it. Actually, there were ways of dealing with COVID that were far less disruptive than lockdowns. They did them in Taiwan and South Korea. That is to say, they ramped up testing, they contact tracing, and they isolated the people who were sick and infectious. We dithered around January, February, and then panicked in mid-March. And, looking back, the lockdowns of the spring were incredibly economically disruptive. I think the biggest mistake, the one that we're going to really come to regret, is closing the public schools for as long as they've been closed in many states, including California, where I'm based. I think that has just taken, kids in public schools and deprived them of a year of education, and it will not be easy to repair the damage that has been done there. And considering how little risk there was to kids, and considering that private schools seemed able to reopen, you have to wonder just what the priorities of the teachers' unions and the local officials were. I have to say, I think this was one of the notable errors. And they didn't make that mistake in 1957-58, even although actually kids were much more at risk from the Asian flu than they were from COVID.
Right. Well, my aunt was a teacher back then, and I lived with her, and I don't even remember in Portland, Maine, I don't even remember her being a member of a union. But now you have as we're seeing now from the stories that are breaking, the teachers unions have basically been dictating policy to the Centers for Disease Control. And I mean, again, that was unthinkable in 1957, 58. I mean, federal, I don't know about local, but federal employees couldn't even unionize until 1963. JFK was the one who allowed that, one of the worst mistakes of his presidency, you know?
And, I think one of the things about reading Doom is that you kind of are transported back, and it's not that long a time, to a very different America, where the federal government was significantly smaller, the bureaucracy had not bloated out the way it did after the 1970s, and you didn't have these public sector unions wielding disproportionate political power. That for me was one of the real revelations of writing the book. I guess I hadn't realized just how much this country had changed in the short space of time. Remember, you can tell from my accent, I'm an immigrant originally from the UK, but I think it's the kind of realization that America has morphed in a whole range of ways, some of which I think people don't quite notice because it's been imperceptible. But take yourself in a time machine with my book and you'll be transported back to a 1957 America where this kind of crisis just was unthinkable and was handled completely differently.
I know. I think the one sentence in this piece in the Wall Street Journal that stuck out to me more than any other was your words, perhaps a society with a stronger fabric of family life, community life, and church life was better equipped to withstand the anguish of untimely deaths than a society that has in so many ways come apart. And I mean, I think that sums it up. I mean, in all of the issues that we've been discussing, it's a part of the America has fallen apart in so many ways. And this is an example.
Well, some of your listeners may have got the allusion there to Charles Murray's extraordinary book, Coming Apart, one of the best works, I think, of social science about this this problem ever to be published. The United States is not just polarized in terms of income and wealth. I think what's really shocking is the way everything's become a partisan issue. Nobody in 1957 would have thought of, for example, vaccines as really a political issue. There was tremendous happiness at the speed with which a Montana-born scientist, whose name was Morris Hillman, found a vaccine for the Asian flu, and pride in the speed with which it was then manufactured by the U.S. Drug companies and rolled out, first to the military, to the president, and then to the rest of society. You can kind of trace back to those days our habit of giving elderly Americans a seasonal flu shot. Unfortunately, everything became politicized in America to the point that, you know, even wearing a mask ceased to be a matter of public health, and it became a political issue. And of course, you know, we saw those tremendous protests last year when you might have thought the public health authorities would have been concerned, but it turned out that there were certain kinds of large-scale public gathering that didn't pose a threat to public health. And,
you know,
ordinary folks see the extent to which
right.
health advice is unreliable because it's got politicized.
Yeah, we mentioned earlier the Sturgis motorcycle rally in South Dakota last August. There was San Diego State was saying they had a quote-unquote study that showed there were going to be 267,000 cases that were spread of COVID from this one motorcycle rally of less than a half a million people. And now the CDC is saying there's 400, not 267,000. And Governor Noem in South Dakota is even disputing those numbers. So, I mean, you could, in those days too, you could trust, I think, or at least you had, most Americans had trust in the numbers. No one has any trust on either side in any of these numbers now.
And I think that's understandable because of the way in which public health officials have played fast and loose with the truth, and that's undermined public confidence in a way that really you didn't see back in the 1950s. And I'm going to confess to having felt a good deal of nostalgia as I was writing that part of the book for a younger and more dynamic and perhaps less risk-averse America.
I feel the same way just reading about it. Neil Ferguson, I'm looking forward to reading your book, and it was a great piece in the Wall Street Journal, and the book's title is Doom, the Politics of Catastrophe, and it was published yesterday by Penguin Press, and you can get it anywhere. Neil Ferguson, thanks for being with us. We really appreciate it. Why buy gold? Are you watching what is happening in the world today? Global pandemic, U.S. debt piling up, spiking inflation, and the looming Biden tax plan. In the 2008 financial crisis, many Americans lost a large portion of their retirement savings. So what are you doing now to protect your money? Well, many turn to Goldco, the leading gold IRA company in the U.S. and four-time Inc. 500 winning company. With an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau and thousands of five-star customer reviews, you can trust the team at Goldco to help you protect and grow your wealth. Go to goldco.com/Howie Carr to request your free IRA guide that uncovers the secret that financial advisors won't tell you. So what are you waiting for? Don't delay and fall victim to another stock market crash, inflation hike, or dollar decline. Visit goldco.com/Howie Carr to get your free IRA guide today. If you visit goldco.com/Howie Carr now, Goldco will give you up to $10,000 in free silver when you open a qualifying account. That's right, up to $10,000 in free silver. I'm Howie Carr.
Did you miss part of today's show?
What we've got here is failure to communicate.
Just search Howie Carr on your favorite podcast app and listen anywhere, anytime.
We gave you a gun and the authority to use it. One is no good without the other. They don't know that out there. So they'll scream blue murder until the next time they need a man with a badge.
Howie Carr.
But some of the parts of our economy need special help.
So, economy needs help. Okay. Cut 7.
They changed their menus. They transitioned to takeout and delivery so they could be serving people who depended on them.
Okay. Cut 6.
This is an industry that provided more opportunity for minority managers than any other industry in America.
Al, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Al.
How's it going, Howie?
Good.
Howie, I wanted to talk about the Yak Hacks and CETA.
Yes.
I worked for YAC for 3 years. I fell out of the good graces of the political machine.
Wait a second. I thought everything was on the level then. I thought that was the Comprehensive Employment Training Act. You had to deliver for the political organization in the city to keep your job? That's shocking, Al.
Oh, most definitely. And when I said to him, my job is working with the Ute of East Boston, I said, they come first. If we do our jobs, that's the best campaigning we could do. Obviously, they didn't like that.
And what did D.D. Coviello say to you?
Not for nothing. There was D.D., there was Sonny,
Sonny Buttiglione, right? Sonny Buttiglione, D.D. Coviello, they were down at Junior's Trolley, right?
Sonny Buttiglione, yep, Junior's Trolley. D.D., Tommy Rossi.
Trav was down there. Trav was just getting started.
Bobby Trav was just getting started.
Yeah.
And then he became the Senate president.
Right. Now he's a big shot lobbyist with a low digit license plate. I that was Ward 1. That was those were the days. Not. And that's it. They were all on CETA. That was federal money. And now they want to bring the days of CETA and Yak back. I remember those days. It was not a good use of money. Bill, you're next with Howie Carr. Go ahead, Bill. Quickly, Bill.
Yeah, I was going to talk about the Hong Kong flu. I was a freshman in high school in 57, 58. And we went to high school. We never even knew there was a pandemic going on.
That's what one of the VIPs just said. Same thing. He was a little younger than you. But, people didn't know. It just was one of the – there was – just like today, there was flu every winter. What was the difference? Thanks for the call, Bill. I'm Howie Carr.